Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Jeremiah Valencia was just 13 years old when he was brutally tortured, killed, and then buried on the side of a highway near Nambe. His mother, Tracy Pena, her boyfriend, Tomas Ferguson, and his son, Jordan Nunez, are all charged in the boy's murder.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen.
This very, very sad tale starts to unfold at Santa Fe Prison. This is when an inmate receives a confession from one of her friends stroke cellmates in there. So 35-year-old Tracy Ann Pena, she's basically talking about literally finding her own son deceased at home. She also blames it all on her boyfriend, Thomas Wayne Ferguson. Now, bear in mind, at this moment in time, Tracy's actually in prison for tampering with and concealing evidence in relation to drug charges involving cocaine. She is not whiter than white in any way whatsoever. This is a woman with a long rap when it comes down to prior convictions. However, this is a completely different type of crime than what she's usually involved in. I mean, we're talking about the death and the concealment of her own child. So understandably, this confession and, of course, the very brave confession of the cellmate who actually goes to the authorities about this leads to the investigation of the death of 13-year-old Jeremiah, her son, which is just harrowing to imagine, isn't it? Let's be real about this. Imagine being in a situation where your child has died at somebody else's hands. What would you want to do? Would you want to cover it up? And let's be real, this isn't about whether somebody's terrified. Tracy Ann Pena may well have been terrified of Thomas Wayne Ferguson. That goes without saying. It's very likely she was. But would you cover that death and concealment of a corpse up when you are literally blood-related in the closest way possible to the child that's died? That's exactly what happens in this case. So let's talk about the most important person in this case, the victim, Jeremiah Andrew Valencia. He was born on the 6th of December, 2003. He was born in Nambe Pueblo in New Mexico, which is a rural area of Santa Fe. Now, he was born to Andrew Valencia and Tracy Pena. He did have a sister 1 year younger than him. And when it comes down to people's opinions of Jeremiah, well, family and friends remember him as a really quiet, creative child. He had this massive fondness for animals. Apparently that was one of his main interests. He loved being around animals and animals really warmed to him. I always think that's because animals see straight through our humanity into our soul and understand whether we are truly a good person or not. And in this case, they saw him as a very good person. Now, understandably as well, he loved playing video games like all young people tend to. He was described by people who were friends with him as really kind-hearted, incredibly respectful. He had a particular love for going fishing. He had a massive passion for cars. In fact, he'd always point out cars that he really liked and he had a real interest in them. And one of the things that he said when he was a young man was that he just couldn't wait to grow up. He wanted to get his own driving license. And the reason that he wanted to get his driving license was basically because he wanted to get a car. And if he got a car, he'd be able to help his family members get around. And he'd be able to, in particular, drive his younger sister around. One of the things that came out in the research and from some of the court notes is that as far as his sister was concerned, he was an amazing brother to her. He always looked out for her. He was said to be very, very protective. Now, because his father is not very involved in his life, and his mother is on her own, we can understand that at points, she's going to want to be in a relationship potentially with someone new. But when you have children, you have a duty to those children to provide an appropriate individual in their lives. Now, I get it. Before anybody thinks I'm being overly judgmental, we do know I do have a capacity for that at times. What I want to know is, I get it. I get that the thing about predators who are out there, who are looking for vulnerability so they can exploit that vulnerability and they can exert control, they are going to present as a positive in their new partner's life for a period of time. That goes without saying. However, if you meet a partner and they have a criminal rap sheet for very violent crimes as long as my entire body, if you invite them into your world and your children's world, you are complicit. I have no sympathy, no empathy, and I have no comprehension of how any mother, irrespective of her problems, could invite...
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Into their lives, knowing that the individual they are bringing in is a violent predator. But that's exactly what happens in this case. So she meets Thomas Ferguson, and he was basically somebody, as I said, that had this extensive criminal history over the past 20 years. So this isn't some minor misdemeanor. He's a felon of the highest level, and he is a dangerous man. And one of the things that's been noted about this particular individual was he specifically would go for single mothers because he felt that made them easier to exploit. It made them more vulnerable, and it could, of course, mean they were more reliant on him to some degree. And using that knowledge meant that he would insert himself in those relationships so he could then absolutely use his control desire, which is all that he's concerned about. He has this control desire where all he wants to do is be in charge. And this is going to lead to fatal consequences for a member of the household. But she isn't concerned about that because she's not thinking in that moment in time about anything apart from her own needs. Now, you will understand the term career criminal, and that's what he's known as. Just to go through a few of his charges. Well, in 2003, he was charged and found guilty of battery of his wife at the time. So this guy is a domestic perpetrator through and through. He was also found guilty for hitting, choking, and kicking her while she held their 8-month-old daughter. Now, one of the things that we know where domestic perpetrators are concerned is that they particularly like it when you have a child with them or are pregnant with them because it makes you even more vulnerable. It means that you are far less likely to be able to retaliate and protect yourselves. And also, many women feel that they are now captured and therefore they don't seek the help they deserve. Fortunately, she did. Now, in 2014, he's also charged with kidnapping, raping, and beating his girlfriend at the time in an ordeal that basically started on Valentine's Day, just the day to beat, rape, and kidnap your partner. That just blows your mind, doesn't it? On a very day where people are celebrating love, this man is so sinister, he's carrying out these kind of activities. Now, he did plead guilty to this in 2015, and it's worth noting at this point that he did attempt suicide before his arrest. So obviously somebody who likes to feel that he can evade capture to some degree, or maybe even just garner sympathy because his ex is going to feel responsible that he's tried to take his own life. Never underestimate the manipulation of these kind of master manipulators. Genuinely, these predators, they spend their lives manipulating, so it could be that he just felt that he wanted to show her that her actions had led to him trying to take his own life. Now, for that crime, and it's going to blow your mind, he was sentenced to 10 years and 8 months. And you may think, well, that's a reasonable sentence. I don't think so. I think sexual predators should be locked up for the rest of their natural lives. But even though he's given this 10 years and 8 months, the judge suspended his sentence and gave him 495 days due to the days he'd already spent in jail. Which makes no sense. This is a sexual predator of the highest level. Now, at this point, he is put on an electronic monitor for 2 years, but after his probation officer checked in with him in 2016, one of the things that comes across immediately to that probation officer, who's doing the job, they're going out and checking on him, they realise that the woman who answers the door to him shows evidence that he's been abusing yet another woman. So that probation officer then goes to the court and says he's violated his probation. But guess what? The judge is like, well, we could send him back to prison. I mean, that would be the right thing to do. But why do the right thing with a massive sexual predator when instead we can allow him to remain on probation rather than give him a prison sentence? Genuinely, that makes no sense whatsoever, because we're talking about a high-level predator here, and he has a very long litany of other charges against him. And the reality is that this means there's no consequences as far as he is concerned. He can literally beat a woman up, he can rape a woman, and he doesn't actually spend the amount of time allotted to him in prison at all. He's just allowed to walk freely around. Now, he did plead no contest to those allegations, so clearly he's admitting that he was absolutely involved in abusing another woman. And what is deeply frustrating about this case, aside from the fact this predator should not be on the streets full stop, he should be in prison, it's as simple as that. He's not changed his behaviour. And what we see with these kind of violent perpetrators is they escalate their behaviour, and that's exactly what's going to happen. But what is deeply frustrating is literally a week before he carries out the murder I'm going to talk about. So this is on November the 21st of 2018. Attorneys actually officially filed for his probation to be revoked because they found out he'd failed to report to his probation officers and they'd moved address without permission. So basically, the probation are doing a good job here. They are following him around, they're figuring out where he is going, and the minute that he actually breaches that, they are going about their business to try to get him back into prison. But he shouldn't have been out of prison. That judge should never have seen fit to do that. Now, the mother in this case, Tracy, she again has a really high level criminal past. So she'd been booked into Santa Fe County Jail a total of, I kid you not, 22 times. 22 times. So again, somebody who has got poor impulse control is somebody who doesn't think about consequences. And even when those consequences are served, thus taking her away from her own children, she does not change her behavior. So this is not a good place for any child to be brought up. Now, understandably, because Tracy is constantly in prison and also her deadbeat boyfriend, Thomas, is also in prison a great deal, that means that Jeremiah and his siblings need to be taken care of by somebody else, and that care falls into the lap of Celine Miera, his aunt. Now, she was said to be excellent, genuinely a good human being, compassionate of heart, absolutely nurturing, and she took really good care of he and his siblings. And she was always the person that would be called upon. Tracy would say, please, I'm going to go away again because I'm going to prison. You take care of my kids. And she would always agree to do so. And she would agree without any frustration. She would agree because she's just a really good human being. Now, as Jeremiah gets a little bit more grown up, because we're talking about him dying just shy of his 14th birthday in this case, he has dealt with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune being brought up in the care of somebody who is a horrific parent. And I'm sorry, that is exactly what Tracy is. She's a horrific parent. She prioritizes her own needs. She doesn't really think about the needs and welfare of her own children. And that means that he goes through a lot of dysfunction. He's a really good young person at heart, but there are problems that he experiences and encounters as a symptom of his being brought up in this respect. So, whilst this was not entered by the prosecution, this information was brought into the case. And I'm going to go through it, but bear in mind, this is about text messages between him and friends. So we can't take this as absolute verbatim truth, because we know that we have lots of conversations with our friends that don't necessarily mean that what we are saying is 100% as things are. Now, bear in mind, Jeremiah had witnessed his own mother's drug abuse, so he'd been witnessing that dependency. And he apparently started to smoke weed and he was struggling to quit. I imagine that he was just self-medicating his emotional agony, because being brought up in this environment must have been agonising. Also, it was said that he was getting into fights on the street or at school. Like I said, this is text messages between him and a friend. Also, he was pulled out of school with his sister as well in February of 2017. And at this point, this is because Tracy's lied and said he's going to another school, but he's never enrolled in any other school. And that absence from the education system went completely unnoticed. So we have a child who's just a ghost child. Now, neighbours said that they never saw him go to school. And that means that he had a lot of time on his hands. He was understandably bored at that time. That's not going to help when you've got this dysfunctional environment and you're trying to quit weed, but actually something to do in that moment is actually have a spliff, because you don't really know what to do with your life and you're not being looked after and protected. And the reason I'm telling you this information is it comes from digital evidence that was uncovered, and it kind of describes his mental state. And I think this kid was tortured. So text messages that were sent to a friend said things like, yeah, I've not been so good. My mum just quit on me. I mean, my mum just quit on me, Jeremiah. Your mum didn't quit on you. Your mum never took the job, sweetheart. She never took the role. Don't you just wish, in cases like this, that we could speak to the child, that the child would still be alive, so we'd have the opportunity.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets, with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
To remind them that their role was to be a child. Their role was to be a kid. Their role was not to think about a parent quitting on them. Their role was to understand that they didn't have a parent at all in these moments, because she was deadbeat. It's as simple as that. And instead, he's internalizing it. He feels like his mother's quit on him, and he's making it about himself instead of seeing this reality for what it is, because no role model is telling him that he's not the problem. And even if he's symptomatic behaviorally, he's not the problem. It's coming from a place of deep pain. Now, the reason he said this is he would constantly try and communicate with her and she wouldn't respond to him. He'd text her and say that he loved her. He'd get no responses back. Can you imagine that? I'm sure some of you can. I'm sure some of you have been through this. It literally breaks my heart that any child could text a primary caregiver and say, I love you, and not get an I love you back, even if that child has acted in a way that makes you unhappy. You still always let them know you love them. It's so powerfully important. He'd also expressed to that friend in text messages that he wanted to quit marijuana, saying, I started pot again. I tried to quit, but I couldn't. And his friend asked, how's his mother doing? And he said, she's not good. She's doing very bad. She's doing drugs. So he's obviously caring deeply about his mother's trajectory here. And he's not pinning blame on her. He's basically saying she's not good because she's doing drugs, but he's not being negative about her. Then another text to his friend also said, I'm not the same. As soon as my mum kicked me out, I've gone everywhere and nobody took me in except for my auntie. I beat up so many guys for her. I'm not the same. I'm losing it. I don't know what to do anymore. I don't know what to do. Now, bear in mind, like I said, Jeremiah dies just before his 14th birthday. So this is a really young kid who shouldn't know what to do, who doesn't have the capacity to understand what to do, has got such a dysfunctional and destabilized background that he'll do anything to impress his mum. He'll do anything to help his mum because he's desperate for her validation and desperate for her love, and it just isn't forthcoming. Now, what we know about this case is that Tracy, Jeremiah's mother, isn't actually present when he loses his life. In fact, on November the 24th of 2017, Tracy is in jail. She's been charged for not appearing in court. Then we get to the early hours of January the 25th, 2018, while Tracy is still incarcerated. And it's at this point the prison staff get a confession from another female inmate. And this female inmate had previously actually made a call from the prison to her sister, speaking to her sister, saying that she needs to get in contact with a detective for her because she has some information of something that's happened to a little boy. Now, she then goes on to tell her that another inmate has confessed to her that a murder of a young boy has occurred and that this particular inmate has begged her not to tell anybody. But you can imagine that for the most part, women in prison are not in prison for really serious crimes. It's often violations of probation, or it might be that you failed to turn up at court for DUI, etc. And that means that the level of comprehension you have about crime is very distinct to what you would have in a male prison. So when somebody tells you that a murder's occurred, that is going to lay heavy on your mind. And no matter how much you like the person who's confessed to you, you're going to know on the whole, if you have a shred of conscience, that you have to talk to somebody about that. And she courageously does that. Now, she speaks to detectives. She is apparently very hesitant at that point to give information because the inmate is a really good friend of hers. Tracy and her get on very well. But that moral dilemma in her mind means that she feels she's got no other opportunity than to actually confess to the prison officers. So that's what happens and how it plays out. Now, the inmate tells them that she was aware of the death of this boy and that she knows he's been buried somewhere. But she's also informed by Tracy about the horrific abuse that the boy has endured before his death. She also says to the detectives, the boy that Tracy is talking about is her son, Jeremiah. So in the early hours of January the 25th, 2018, this is while Tracy is still incarcerated, staff at the prison where she's serving her time, they get a confession from another female inmate. That female inmate had previously made a call to her sister and had told her sister that she really needs her sister to get in contact with a detective for her as she has some, quote, information of something that's happened to a little boy. Now, she then goes on to tell her that another inmate had confessed to her about the murder of a young boy and that that inmate had basically begged her not to tell anybody what has gone on. Now, when this particular inmate's talking to the detectives, she was apparently really hesitant to give the information because this other inmate was a good friend of hers. But she has this massive moral dilemma and quandary, which essentially makes her confess to the prison officers. Now, the inmate tells the detectives that she's aware of the death of this boy and that she knows that he has been buried somewhere. She also tells the detectives that this boy went through some serious abuse before his death and that the inmate who was talking to her about this particular killing was actually talking about the killing of her own son. Now, initially, that inmate who confesses to the prison officers and then to the detectives, she doesn't actually want to be forthcoming with the name of the individual who's told her this information and actually asks for a lawyer to be present. And you can imagine that's going to be challenging for her because she has an allegiance, an alliance with this particular individual, and she knows that she's going to be breaching that confidence equally. She knows a child has died and she needs to do something about it. Now, after her lawyer is present, no doubt she will have been given great advice by that lawyer because she's going to have asked them what they think she should do, and no doubt they're going to have encouraged her to tell the truth. She then begins a confession about what her friends told her. It's at this point she reveals that the inmate's name is Tracy Pena. She tells them how Tracy told her that her boyfriend had hit her, so she'd been a domestic abuse victim, but also that he'd been very violent towards her son in the past. She said that her boyfriend's last name was Ferguson and how he had literally left her son's face, quote, black and blue in the past. She then tells this particular inmate that she'd come home one day to literally find her son dead, lying on the bed, bleeding and bruised. But the reality is, her boyfriend has got absolutely no plan to come forward and admit what he's done to take accountability and responsibility. Quite the contrary. He's decided what they're going to do is they're going to cover up his death, they're going to bury this young boy's body, and they're going to get away with murder. It's as simple as that. Their plan also involved that they were going to claim that he was missing and that he'd basically been living in a different state with his aunt and then just disappeared off the face of the planet. And a lot of you might think, well, you know, there's no way he could have got away with murder. Children don't just go missing and not get followed up on. Actually, they do. And with respect, we've seen that he was meant to be enrolled in a school and nobody followed it up. So he's kind of a ghost child there. In fact, I would say his aunt is the one person who refuses to give up on where this child is. And the chances are it would have come to light that he was missing because of her persistence. But many children disappear and people don't find out what happened to them. So it is possible that people do get away with murder. Now, bear in mind, they've now got this confession from this inmate and they're very quick to act at this point. They begin contacting family members of the boy that they suspect at this point to be dead. They contact Jeremiah's godmother, Celine Miera, who was Tracy's aunt, as well as Jeremiah's half-sister, Karen Gonzalez. But they also find out that neither of them have actually seen him since the previous July. So that was 2 months ago. Now, in late 2017, this is weeks before the discovery of Jeremiah, what we do know is that Celine had been trying to make calls to Jeremiah. So in this case, people are trying to figure out what's happened to him, but they got no answer or call back. Now, that's unusual. Then she tries to contact his mother, Tracy, but she doesn't get a response from her either. And Jeremiah's stepsister, Karen, she actually goes as far as to contact the New Mexico's Youth and Family Department, as well as the police, because they want to know where he is. They don't understand how he can just have disappeared off the planet. And I would imagine that they have a belief that...
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Something sinister could have played out. And to be fair to Karen, she called New Mexico's Youth and Family Department every day for numerous days, but she wasn't given any answers or information, and that is so frustrating. Can we imagine putting ourselves in that position where you feel that something sinister could have played out, or that a child could be at risk, or that you just need to know that the welfare of the child is in a good place, and you're constantly ringing the services that are meant to protect them, and you're getting no help? Particularly in light of what I'm going to talk about today, which is the murder and abuse of this very child that they're concerned about. Now, a few days later, this is after one of her calls, she said she absolutely knew that something was wrong. And the officer just said they'll send someone over to her home to speak to her, as in to speak to Tracy. Not good enough. Not good enough on any level. Now, one of the things that the investigators have access to, because both Tracy and Thomas, the main perpetrator in this case, are concerned, is that they are both in prison. That means they have access to the jail phone recordings. Now, the day after she's confessed what's happened to Jeremiah, she calls Thomas. And on that particular call, she's literally telling him that she's been crying every day. But there's something strange about their conversation. They sound suspicious. It's as if they know there's something they want to talk about, but they don't actually want to mention it over the phone. So even though they haven't got anything solid, there is something really suspicious about the way they are talking. So the sheriff's office, they get both of them from prison that they're staying at. They bring them both in for questioning at the station. Now, when they begin questioning, Thomas tells the investigators his son's name, Jordan Nunez. Now, when that name is spoken, Jordan Nunez, the officer recognises the name and says, didn't he get arrested the other day for punching someone? Turns out that his son, Jordan, had indeed been charged and arrested after someone pressed charges against him. In fact, he's seen on surveillance footage at around 8:15 p.m. on that particular day outside a grocery store. He's just walking up to a stranger. There's basically been some verbal altercation in the parking lot, and he punches the stranger in the face. Now, allegedly, that stranger called him a bitch, but to actually go and punch somebody in the face when they've called you a bitch, I know it's very insulting. I do appreciate that. Much more so in the United States. The term bitch is apparently very degrading when you throw it at a guy. But to physically assault somebody, that shows really poor impulse control, and it also shows a violent nature. And so we can note that Thomas's son has a violent nature. In fact, he's seen on body cam footage and he's getting arrested and he's telling the officer, I'm a hothead. And he is indeed correct. Clearly, punching a stranger for saying something you don't like makes you more than a hothead. It means you're quite a violent individual, full stop. Now, conveniently for Thomas, the very fact that his son has been captured in this way and is seen with this reputation is kind of handy for him because he's going to try to throw all the blame at his own son. Could you get any lower than low? If you think about spectrum of decent person to the lowest of the lowest of the low, where would Thomas be in blaming his own child for carrying out the most heinous and brutal killing of another human being? Yeah, it wouldn't even reach the lowest of the low. It would be so far below it, it would probably be in the fiery pits of hell already. Now, when it came down to Tracy's interview, she claimed to the investigators that Jeremiah had run away from home weeks earlier and that she had no idea where he was. She also told the investigators that her daughter was under the care of her stepson, Jordan, which is obviously Thomas's biological son, and that he was looking after her whilst they were serving the time in prison. So she's basically said, oh, Jeremiah has disappeared. And she also said that the reason that she hadn't reported her son missing was because she had active arrest warrants and that she just basically wanted to avoid law enforcement, because that's what any good parent would do, isn't it? You're going to be sitting there thinking, oh, my 13-year-old boy has just disappeared off the face of the earth. I've no idea where he is. He could be dead. He could be injured. He could be being taken hostage. He could have left of his own volition, but I don't have any idea because I'm not actually going to ask for any help figuring out where he is. I'm just going to hope one day he comes back. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever. At 13, you would be literally on the phone to the authorities. It wouldn't matter that you'd get arrested. That wouldn't be something you were concerned about because you have a level of compassion and love as a parent. But no, she didn't apparently get that memo, and this is her excuse. Now, she later comes clean. She confesses that on the 26th of November 2017, she had indeed come home. This is after she'd been in jail, and she'd found Jeremiah's body inside their rental home. She said that he was wrapped up in a blanket, he was lay on the bed, and she immediately noticed when she walked in that his eyes were wide open, he had a blank stare, he was also stiff. And she claimed that once she confronted her boyfriend, Thomas Ferguson, he grabbed the boy's body and drove off. But after this, apparently they never spoke about what happened. Wouldn't you think in that moment she would go ahead and call the authorities and say, my son, my 13-year-old boy, has been murdered by my deadbeat abusive partner? That would just be the natural response to this hideous reality that she's walked into. If you knew that your child had died at the hands of someone who's also violent to you, why wouldn't you act? And the idea that he would just be able to leave with the body of that child and then that you'd never speak of it again is mind-blowing. And also, it's very descriptive of the kind of character that Tracy has. And when it comes down to Thomas Ferguson, you now know he's a capable killer. In fact, he's a child killer. Wouldn't that make you fear for your own life in a way that would mean that you would alert the authorities? It's wrong on every single level in every single way that you look at it. Unless, of course, she's one of those human beings who thinks, I'll choose my partner over my child. Now, she does give confessions of how she was very fearful of Thomas. So again, perfect opportunity to actually get Thomas Ferguson arrested. Wouldn't that make sense? Wouldn't it make sense that you could get him out of your life forever because now he's an absolute murderer of the highest level? Also, and again, this is just so indicative of her character. And I'm sorry, I appreciate that she's an abused woman. I appreciate she's a vulnerable woman, but there is no excuse for the knowledge that she had and not acting on that knowledge. She tells the investigators that Thomas Ferguson had molested her son on previous occasions, sexually molested her own child. She allowed that monster to be in her child's life when she wasn't present, all the while knowing what a sexual deviant he is and was. She also tells the investigators she believed that Thomas Ferguson was responsible for murdering Jeremiah. Well, yeah, go figure. You were in prison. He's the grown-ass adult who's violent at home. Who else is it going to be? And don't get me wrong, He's not going to be the only one responsible. He's not going to be the only one culpable. He's going to be the main driver of any type of abuse and indeed murder in that home. Now, she also tells the investigators that on December the 6th, Thomas Ferguson had actually driven her to somewhere near the New Mexico 503 to show her where he'd physically buried her 13-year-old's body. It was in a secluded location. Now, she did later change her story and said that Jeremiah's body was actually kept in the garage for 3 days. It was wrapped in plastic. And at this point, Thomas Ferguson and his son Jordan took him away for burial. But it's just absolutely hideous to imagine that she allows this to take place without informing the police immediately. Now, when it came down to Thomas Ferguson, well, he gives very conflicting statements. So he claims that the first thing he knew about Jeremiah being dead was when he goes into his bedroom and Tracy basically says to him, oh, Jeremiah's died. He then said he found him lying face up with a blank stare. Then he said he was laying in a different position than when he'd laid down to bed earlier. Then he went on to blame his son, said it was his son's fault. So yeah, apparently Jordan is now the actual responsible party. So father literally blaming his own child for carrying out this killing. And he basically said he was playing with Jeremiah aggressively. Now we're talking about a 13-year-old young man. It wouldn't be aggressively, because if you think about the body of a 13-year-old, you know, you're pretty grown at that point. So if you are playing with somebody so aggressively they die, it doesn't suggest aggressively in a playful way, does it? It means that there was just an aggressive altercation that took place where somebody happened to die, in this case, Jeremiah. And he also says the reason that he didn't call 911 is that he felt that maybe the authorities wouldn't believe that it was Jordan who'd killed Jeremiah. They might believe it was him. What, do you mean based on all of your previous violent offences? Yes, I imagine that they would think it was you, and because it was you. Now, he also continued to deny any involvement. Actually said he wanted to leave the interview at the time, said he hadn't been there when Jeremiah's body was abandoned, and yet, in spite of claiming that he had nothing to do with the abandonment of the body or knowing where it was, he did know the rough area. So I don't know where it was abandoned at all. I didn't even know that Jeremiah had died initially. And what I'm telling you is that I have no idea what played out, but I do kind of roughly know the area in which the body was dumped. I mean, make it make sense. He also said that he knew who buried Jeremiah, but he wouldn't give an identification of the person. Just let's run through that. So you know who buried this child? I do know who buried this child, but I'm not going to tell you. Why? You've told us who killed him. You said it was your own son, so you don't seem to have a problem being forthcoming with that truth. Well, I just feel that's the right thing to do, but I just don't want to tell you where he was buried, because I don't...
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Know where he's buried, even though I know there's a rough area where he was buried. And the reason I know that rough area is because I was the one who buried him. But I'm not going to tell you that, because I think that you might find that incriminating and blame me, because it is my fault. Honestly, you can imagine how annoying it is for the detectives listening to that kind of BS. Now, when it came down to Thomas Ferguson's son, Jordan, it was very enlightening, shall we say. So Jordan gets brought to the station at the same time the interviews are going on with Tracy and Thomas Ferguson. And the first thing, I kid you not, the first thing he asks is my father trying to blame me? Which shows that Jordan has got more insight in his little finger than Thomas Ferguson has in his entire being. Jordan then basically opens up to the investigators and said the night that Jeremiah died, who's basically his stepbrother at this point, he said his father, Thomas Ferguson, had actually punched Jeremiah multiple times in the face, also in the stomach. It then dragged him into the back room. At this point, he locked the door and he just continued to beat him brutally. And he was apparently playing loud music to cover up the sounds. He also said that Thomas Ferguson had placed padlocks around the home so that no one could leave. You couldn't get out, you couldn't escape. And then he just described the litany of absolutely brutal, horrific acts that had gone on for weeks and months before where Jeremiah was concerned. He had torture equipment. It's as simple as that. Thomas Ferguson had brass knuckles. He had a 5-pound sledgehammer. He had a cane. Also, he'd made a homemade spear. Imagine the mentality and psychology of a human being who does that. And we're talking about does that when they're going to use it on a vulnerable young person. You have to be somebody who premeditates the enjoyment you're going to get from using those kind of objects. This is an individual who plans and premeditates the pain he's going to inflict on another human being. He likes the power. He likes knowing that he can inflict whatever pain he wants on this young man. And he can do it without anybody saying anything because everyone is so terrified of him. And also they're locked in the home. So he's basically created this prison. Now, Jordan said that his father literally beat Jeremiah until he could barely walk. Over time, it meant he literally needed to use a cane. And then after he couldn't walk using the cane, he needed to use a wheelchair. And if you imagine what that really means, it means that you've got this boy, Jeremiah, becoming more and more helpless physically and emotionally. He's not getting any support socially. Nobody's coming in to try to help him. And essentially that means that he's completely helpless and he's at the will of this man who is just so highly abusive that it's going to lead to his death. The very fact that he had a cane for a while, and when that stops being used because he can't walk, to get a wheelchair, you can imagine, can't you? At that point, when you're in the wheelchair, this perpetrator can wheel you anywhere and do anything with you. It's the ultimate sign of you losing any opportunity to escape this horror. Now, Jordan also testified that Jeremiah was confined inside a small dog kennel. In fact, that dog kennel was only large enough for a medium-sized dog, and he would be fed scraps through the side. So Thomas Ferguson would just enjoy feeding him scraps, treating him like an animal, worse than a dog, with respect, because the dogs weren't going through the beatings that we're talking about right now. Jordan also said that his father forced him to participate in cleaning Jeremiah's body and also later burying that body in a shallow grave. So Jordan's been made this co-conspirator in this case. Now, the same night the investigators are told this information, they head to the location where they believe Jeremiah's body is buried. Now, Thomas Ferguson is with them, but at that point, of course, he's claiming he doesn't know exactly where the body was buried because he wasn't there. At the end of the day, I'll go with you to the environment and area that apparently I'm meant to have been involved in disposing of this body, but I wasn't here really, so I don't know. I mean, it's this area, but I don't quite know exactly where. I mean, again, just wasting time, refusing responsibility and accountability, demonstrating the level of perpetrator he is, one that believes he's rightful and entitled to go ahead and do whatever he wants to his victim. Now, they couldn't find the burial site that particular evening because he's not being that helpful. But then the next morning, they head back to the same area, but this time Tracy's with them. Now, she told them in that interview that Thomas Ferguson had actually shown her where he'd buried the boy. And it's literally a few minutes after she arrived at the location that she leads them to a tree. She remembered that he was buried near that particular tree. And they actually do find an area of disturbed ground. It's covered in sticks, covered in branches, and it's got a sheep skull placed on top. And I've tried to analyse why that sheep skull was placed there. And on one level, I think, well, is it just a ruse? Did Ferguson think to himself, well, if I place this skull on top and then an animal digs up bones, and you know you're not that educated on what sheep's bones look like compared to human bones, maybe seeing that sheep skull will mean that you just don't think anything untoward has played out there. Then I thought to myself, is it something even more malevolent, even more sinister? Is it just that Thomas Ferguson actually wants to go and visit that place? He wants to mark it, mark the spot, because he's one of those killers who enjoys knowing what he did, and he wants to be able to anchor himself to the moment by always knowing exactly where that grave is. It just speaks of something entirely sinister. Now, when she finds that grave, apparently she broke down in tears. She said, "Send me to prison for the rest of my life. I don't care. It's my fault that he is gone." Yeah, It absolutely is partly your fault that your child has been murdered in the most grotesque of fashions. It's also your fault that you allowed yourself to stand by as the partner that you brought into that child's life, systematically abused, degraded, humiliated, and destroyed your own child. She also said that the only thing she cared about was making sure that Thomas Ferguson went down for what he did. She actually told the officers on the scene how she and Jeremiah had been constantly living in fear of Thomas Ferguson and how they were absolutely desperate to get away from him. But she suggested that he put a GPS tracker on her phone and therefore always knew where she was. And at this point, she starts to talk more about exactly what happened to Jeremiah. She said that Thomas Ferguson had thrown chemicals onto Jeremiah in the past and also continued to give accounts of the brutal physical abuse he endured. Now, the following day, law enforcement went back at the scene where they knew Jeremiah's body was. They began to excavate his body. They carefully dug him up, and it turned out he was actually in a plastic storage container that was upside down. So they actually sealed that box. They took it back to the station so a medical examiner could run the autopsy by the following day. And the autopsy findings were horrific. So they found that the cause of death was blunt force trauma that was consistent with repeated and severe physical abuse. Jeremiah had multiple broken bones. He had signs of extensive physical assault. His remains exhibited injuries that were consistent with burns. Now, the source of those burns, we can't say whether they were thermal, chemical, or friction. They couldn't be definitively determined, but he'd been burned. Also, he had lacerations that were consistent with sexual assault. Now, the prosecution did note this is a possibility rather than a confirmed rape, but his own mother said that Thomas Ferguson was sexually molesting him. And without a shadow of a doubt, if you can degrade and humiliate somebody further, a male doing that to a young boy is going to do that. So it's another tactic of these kind of deviant abusers. Now, after Jeremiah had died, it turns out that actually cleaned his body in a bathtub by both Jordan and his father. And this is before they placed him in the plastic storage container. I'm imagining that's to try to get rid of any DNA evidence that belonged to the actual perpetrators. Also, he was found wearing a diaper, a nappy. Now, that obviously indicates that he was struggling to deal with his bodily functions before his death. So that means that he was neglected prior to the actual assault that killed him, meaning that his medical and basic needs had not been met. Now, another individual that the police interview is Jeremiah's sister. Now, bear in mind, each of the family members at this point have given a conflicting story. So it's the younger sister, in this case, of Jeremiah, who really helps investigators confirm the truth of what happened. She wasn't involved. She was a witness to some of the horrendous things that happened. But there is nothing really that she can say that will incriminate her in any way, shape or form. So the truth is all she needs to tell. Now, it is worth noting that in her first interview, she does tell the investigators that Jeremiah is living with one of Thomas Ferguson's relatives. She apparently doesn't seem to know a lot about where he is, and she basically doesn't know what's happened to him. Now, this is because she's being coerced into believing that should she tell the truth, something terrible is going to happen to her. So she has been bullied to a point where she's willing to lie for the perpetrator because she's afraid of the repercussions. But fortunately, she has an opportunity to speak with her mother, Tracy, and her mother says, look, tell the truth. Now, it's at this point that the story changes. So she basically starts to come out with the actuality of what's played out in her life and what's happened to her brother. So she tells the investigators that over the weeks before Jeremiah's death, Thomas Ferguson had beaten him to the extent he was unable to walk without a cane, or as I said previously, he had to use a wheelchair. She also recalled how her brother had been forced into and locked inside of a dog kennel. This is where Thomas Ferguson would feed him food through the gaps in the plastic, just really enjoying that total control, knowing that Jeremiah would be suffering that humiliation and degradation, just enjoying that sense of him being the master over his environment. Now, bear in mind that crate, it measured 26 inches by 39 inches, which is tiny. Jeremiah's sister also told the investigators how she was so disturbed about what was playing out, but felt so powerless that she could only help her brother when Thomas Ferguson and his son Jordan weren't around. At that point, she'd sneak in, give him food and water. And she said one of the things that was really painful for her to watch was how it wasn't just Thomas Ferguson who was abusing her brother. It was also Jordan, basically her stepbrother. He'd come in, he'd flip the dog crate with her brother inside it. And she knew that that would be causing horrendous pain and injury to him. She also confirmed that her brother had died on November the 26th. This was after another sustained beating from Thomas Ferguson and his son, Jordan. But of course, it was Ferguson that led the beatings. And indeed, it was Ferguson that dragged Jeremiah into a different room and he continued to beat him there. And further forensic evidence validated what Jeremiah's sister was saying. They actually found blood in Thomas Ferguson's bedroom. And it's clear that Tracy, Thomas Ferguson, and Jordan were all aware of the death of Jeremiah and that they contributed to it. Or at least, shall we say, in Tracy's case, turned a blind eye to the concealment of the crime. But of course, the main perpetrator, without a shadow of a doubt, was Thomas Ferguson. And I'm not minimizing Jordan's role in this. He absolutely is guilty as hell. But we also know that there is certainly a predator of the highest level here who is the puppet master in this situation. Now we get to early February 2018. This is when a Santa Fe County grand jury returned an indictment against 42-year-old Thomas Wayne Ferguson. They indicted him on 18 counts. This included first-degree murder, kidnapping, child abuse resulting in death, conspiracy, and evidence tampering. So he was formally arraigned shortly thereafter and he was held without bond. Now, on 28th of April 2018, so he's awaiting trial at this point, Thomas Ferguson was found dead in his jail cell. Apparently he'd taken his own life, so he never actually went before a jury for the main case, which on one level is distressing because I think justice isn't served unless you've actually stood in front of that jury and heard them give you a sentence that you are deserving of. But equally, I think the quicker this guy burns in hell, the better. So I'm sure that he is.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
A light right now and burning brightly for the rest of eternity in horrendous agony, as he deserves, with the big D-E-V-I-L being his main host. But it's also frustrating, because like I said, we don't get to know the deep dive on what really played out, because when it comes down to it, he never actually got to be questioned in court on this. And unfortunately, therefore, for the family, I imagine that is something challenging. They would have liked to know exactly what happened to Jeremiah. And also, whilst it's horrendous to know what he went through, it also allows people to have that empathy with the victim. Now, next to stand trial was Tracy, the mother in this case. She faced court on the 7th of March. Now, she was indicted on multiple counts, including child abuse resulting in death, tampering with evidence, and conspiracy. And when it came down to the prosecution, they basically said, listen, Pena knew about the abuse. She failed to act. She failed to stop it. She actually participated, as far as they were concerned, in burying her son's body. Now, don't get me wrong, they acknowledged that she was the person who led the authorities to the grave, but they felt that she was completely involved in this crime. They described Pena as both complicit, so she was actually engaged in what played out and she went along with it. And they also noted she was indeed controlled. But they argue that her failure to intervene absolutely contributed directly to Jeremiah's death. So the chain of causation was she could have stopped it at any point and she chose not to. Now, of course, Pena's attorneys in the defense in this case, they argue that she was the woman who was under significant coercive control. She was drug dependent. She was also being surveilled by Thomas Ferguson. So basically, she's more a victim than a perpetrator. And I appreciate that's a defense that they're going to go down line wise because it makes sense. But equally, it's indefensible to know your child is being sexually molested, to know your child is being put in a dog cage, to know your child is being starved, to know your child is being treated worse than an animal, and you do nothing. Albeit you're being surveilled, well, he can surveil you as you walk into a police station and tell them about his sins. Just because he's got surveillance on you doesn't mean that he can intercept you. The reality is, you can hot-foot it down to a police station, or you can go and make a phone call, and whether he knows where you are or otherwise, it doesn't stop you giving the information across that can save the life of your own child. The fact that she didn't do that demonstrates not coercion, but absolutely a complicit nature within this crime. Let's be clear, this woman would regularly end up in prison because at the end of the day, she thought about her own needs more than her kid's needs. So why are we meant to believe that she's some kind of victim in this situation who just didn't have any options than to allow her child to be violently beaten, molested, and murdered by a man she invited into her own life? It makes no sense. So the defense very much point out that Tracy was manipulated by Thomas Ferguson, that she was isolated by him, that he monitored her phone, that he manipulated her behavior. And they also say, yes, she did admit her guilt, but you have to understand what she was doing was she was acting under intimidation and fear. Now, she ends up being allowed to accept a plea deal. She pled guilty to one count of child abuse resulting in death and three counts of conspiracy. Now, as part of that plea deal, she also agreed to testify against Jordan Nunez, who is obviously Thomas Ferguson's biological child. And that meant that the prosecution felt that their case would be strengthened against him, and he's seen as a much bigger perpetrator. So they feel that she is helpful to the prosecution. That's why she's given that deal. She was sentenced to 21 years, but 9 of those were suspended. So effectively it meant that she'd serve 12 years. I think she got off real lightly. I genuinely do. I appreciate that she's had a difficult life. I appreciate that she was a battered woman, but she was absolutely complicit in the death of her son, and she allowed him to be tortured, violently abused, and murdered basically in front of her own eyes. She also helped disguise his disappearance when he was buried, and that means that she is entirely culpable. Now, when it came down to Jordan Nunez, he was the last person to stand trial. He was indicted on the 3rd of April for 13 charges. These included child abuse resulting in death and tampering with evidence. Now, the prosecutors, they emphasised that he willingly participated in the extended abuse and torture of Jeremiah. And he did. At the end of the day, Jeremiah's sister saw him going in of his own volition and flipping the dog cage with Jeremiah in that dog cage. And we know that Jeremiah was so badly injured, he was in a wheelchair at points. So it's not as if Jordan was not aware of the extent of the injuries. They also alleged that he helped restrain, shock, and confine Jeremiah in a dog kennel, and that he repeatedly beat him and he assisted in covering up the death of Jeremiah. Now, prosecutor Jennifer Padgett Macias, she stated, despite the opportunities to do so, he failed to stop Ferguson and failed to intervene to protect Jeremiah. And Jeremiah died as a result. Now, the defense, understandably, and we all know where they'll go in this case, they want to portray him as this intimidated and controlled teenager living under his father, who is unbelievably abusive and also substance dependent, so chaotic in the way that he acts. They argued that Jordan just felt powerless and helpless, and also he was psychologically coerced into participating. Now, again, I do not believe a young man who is a late teenager at this point would be considered an adult. I don't believe you can coerce somebody into participating in the horrendous abuse and killing of a child. I really don't. Because whilst he may not have dealt the fatal blows, the chain of causation means that he dealt many of the blows that led to that death. You have an opportunity to say no at any point. And I get it. I get that that would probably have resulted in Jordan being beaten. I understand. That is not a palatable experience to go through. But you know what? At least when you're the one being beaten, it's because you've taken the moral right ground. You've gone ahead and said no to a perpetrator who is basically slowly killing a child. The very fact that Jordan felt it was better to go ahead and get involved in that violence speaks about his nature. Because there are many of us who can empathise that Jordan was in a very difficult situation. But equally, we all know that if somebody told us, beat this child, torture this child, shock this child, harm this child, we would say no. And if they said to you, well, I'm going to really hurt you now, you would say, well, that is unfortunate. I don't want it to happen, but you're going to have to really hurt me. You would stand in the way of that child. You would protect that child. And if you think about yourself as a 17, 18-year-old, 19-year-old person, somebody wants to abuse and harm a child that is in front of you, what would you do? Would you walk away? No. Would you help beat that person? No. Would you stand in front of them and take the blows yourself? 100% yes. And that's not what Jordan did. And he might have felt powerless to some degree against his father, but he became all powerful in Jeremiah's life when he was beating him. So I don't buy into that. Like father, like son. Now, the defense psychologist, Dr. Jeffrey Rowe, he testified that Jordan was suffering from PTSD, ADHD, and also learning disabilities. So he also, with respect, got a plea deal. He pled guilty to one count of recklessly permitting child abuse resulting in death and two counts of tampering with evidence. Now, his possible sentencing was looking at 24 years, but his defense asked for less time. They sought 14 to 21 years. They said he was 19 at the age of his crime. He didn't have a big criminal history. Now, when it came down to his sentencing, that happened on the 16th of October, 2020, Jordan Nunez was formally sentenced to 21 years in prison. Now, that sentencing included separate maximum penalties, so 18 years for recklessly permitting child abuse resulting in death, and an additional 3 years for tampering with evidence. He also apologised publicly to Jeremiah's family. He acknowledged his failure to call 911 on the day that child died, and he also said he was very remorseful about his actions. But with respect, it's not going to bring Jeremiah back, is it? And there were so many opportunities to change the outcome and course of this trajectory. But Jordan didn't choose any of those options. And I appreciate the defense expert said that he had ADHD and PTSD, and let's just throw in a whole other lot of letters, but it doesn't make a difference, does it? Doesn't matter if you've got some learning disabilities. If you've got empathy and morality, you pick up the phone. It doesn't matter if you've got ADHD.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Believe me, if ADHD was a license to kill, well, right now, our highest level ever of us having these classifications, people would be dead everywhere, wouldn't they? It's not in line with those issues to become a torturer and somebody who contributes to the murder of a child. A lack of action on the day that he died, meaning that there was no hope for him because he didn't bother calling 911. And before that, his activity in abusing this child culminating, without a doubt, in contributing to his death. Now, Sergeant Richard Matthews, who was involved in this case, said one of the things that was unbelievable was that he's had this career in law enforcement, and yet he said, these things stay with you, especially when you recognise everything you've been told. So literally, you can be a dyed-in-the-wool officer, and the memory of this case will stay with him because he's heard the information, he's been secondarily traumatized by it. And even though he's had this career, this cuts deep. Then Sheriff Robert Garcia, he said, in my years in law enforcement, I would think that this is one of the most terrifying types of investigations I've seen. District Attorney Marco Serna said, he was placed in a dog kennel for hours on end without food. It's absolutely heartbreaking. These acts are senseless. They are senseless to a normal, typical, well-adjusted human being, but not to a predator. to the predator, these are not senseless. These are everything. These are about power play, control. These are about humiliation, degradation. It's about looking at yourself as a god and looking at this individual that you are harming as an individual with no power who you can choose to switch on or off. It's as simple as that. You can keep them alive and abuse them, and you can make the decision, as a god can, to just end their life of your volition. That makes these perpetrators feel so unbelievably powerful. It makes absolute sense to them. And there's a particular quote that came from CYFD Secretary Monique Jacobson. She said, if you think about what it would take for a child over the age of 12 to die as a result of child abuse, you're talking about significant force or starvation. It has to be quite significant. And unfortunately, that's what we saw in this case. So she's highlighting the amount of abuse it takes to kill a 12, 13, 14-year-old kid is enormous, because you're built and your body can take a great deal at that point. So he was literally tortured, starved, and eventually murdered over a protracted period of time. They believe between 6 to 9 months. So he went through that agony for all that time. When it came down to Jeremiah's obituary, it's worth noting what was said about him by the people who loved and knew him. They described him as a precious little angel with the phrase, God has you in his arms now. A rosary was held on February 8, 2018, followed by a mass at St. Anthony's Catholic Church in Pecos, New Mexico. Celine, his lovely aunt, his amazing aunt, the woman who always cared about him, wanted to know he was safe, tried to find out where he was when he disappeared. She said, Jeremiah's not going to be gone from my heart. And well, anybody's heart that he touched. Anyone that knew him, he touched their heart. She added, I guarantee you, they'll never forget Jeremiah. He's going to be part of my life forever until I see him again. Approximately 5 years later, in January 2023, Jeremiah's father, Andrew Valencia, held a public vigil at Alto Park in Santa Fe to honour what would have been his son's 18th birthday, a birthday he's never going to get to experience because he was murdered at the hands of this predatorial tyrant. He also shared a remembrance of Jeremiah as a happy little boy with a promising future, and he urged community members to remember him for who he was, not just how he died. And that's so pertinent. That's so true. It's so hard at times, isn't it, when we cover these cases, to not focus on the end. I remember when I lost my dad, and you'll all know that I lost my dad in a very traumatic suicide, and I was the person who found him, that often you'll focus on that moment, because that moment is the most shocking and traumatic and horrific and hideous. But if you focus on that moment, you deny the meaning that they had in the world. You deny the memories that they shared in this world. You deny who they were as a whole. And so when you take the focus off the emphasis of loss in that moment and you place it back on the being and the life, all of a sudden, all of the good is remembered, not the bad. Jeremiah deserves to be known for a life that was fully lived until he met that hideous perpetrator. For a boy who, at least from some people, was fully loved, particularly from his aunt. And that's how we bring these individuals back to life, albeit only in our minds, in our memories. And Jeremiah deserves that. It's horrific to know that Thomas Ferguson was invited into Jeremiah's life by his own mother, and she just stood by as he decimated him. I appreciate every single one of you who shares this space with me and who listens to these stories, because I appreciate that off. But we also need to hear them. Jeremiah deserves that respect. He's in bliss, whereas Thomas Ferguson, as I said, is burning brightly in hell for the rest of eternity. May he burn. May he burn. See you again next time.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.